beats is much better.
You are listening to WGXC ICRA, hands-on creative community radio at 90.7 FM and streaming live online at WGXC.org. WGXC is a program division of Wave Farm.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Welcome to Radio Survivor. We're here for the love of radio and sound. My name's Paul Reismandel.
Hello, everybody. Eric Klein here. I love radio and sound. I love making Radio Survivor.
And I'm Jennifer Waits.
And today, we've got a bunch of fun topics to talk about. We're going to talk about podcasting. We're going to talk about, of course, radio stations. We're going to talk about vinyl. We're going to talk about some amazing college radio experiments. There's a lot of
fun stuff. Yeah, you know, we here at Radio Survivor, we celebrate all the kinds of non-commercial radio that float just under the world of national public radio, which it's a big tent, and it's actually, once you start to try to define it, you fall down rabbit holes. But it's the world that we care about at Radio Survivor, and stuff.
And we know, Jennifer, you're a little tired because you're in the midst of Vinylthon at KFJC.
That's right. Yes, I sort of encouraged my friends
it's
and colleagues.
Fault.
It's my fault. I'm now publicity director there, so now it's like full disclosure. But
oh, and KFJC, you know, is a college radio station that spins a lot of records
in Los Altos Hills.
Yeah, we do regularly. So yeah, I'm a volunteer. That's a volunteer position. We just counted, we have 45,000 pieces of vinyl in the
wow.
KFJC library, and it gets used all the time, and vinyl is added to the station on a regular basis. So, yeah, when I heard that College Radio Day was, well, I know that they've been doing Vinylthon the past few years, and
so this
finally,
is when the stations sign up to play a lot of exclusive vinyl programming on Record Store Day, which is April 13th, which will be in the past when people have heard this show, but right
Correct.
Now is still a day away. But KFJC, you're overachievers.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the first year that I really kind of extra special encouraged folks at KFJC to see if we might participate, because to participate, you only have to agree to air 1 hour of vinyl during the day, which,
sure.
you know, happens at KFJC on a normal basis. So I figured we could do 24 hours, which is the goal for a lot of stations. But then I thought, with the station's 60th anniversary this year, we should go for 60 hours, which easily we had enough, you know, regular DJs were like, yeah, of course.
You keep raising the bar. I love it.
You're going to have to replace a lot of styli on Monday.
Maybe. Yeah. And then, so then, like, clearly it was exceeding 60 hours, so we decided 89.7 hours for the spot on the dial. KFJC is 89.7. And then people started earlier than anticipated, so now we're at something like 104 hours.
That's wonderful. So this is your radio station, KFJC. Is all the DJs are doing all of their music, playing all the sets that they're sharing with the audience is coming off of vinyl only. Yep. Records. What does that do to the sound of the radio station?
It sounds normal to me. I mean, it sounds like KFJC, you know, because we add vinyl all the time. So, you know, people are playing new music that we've added. People are playing older music. And it's regular DJs on their regular shifts who are playing vinyl. So they're doing their regular show.
How does it sound compared to folks, for someone who listens to other radio stations, maybe even other college and community stations where, you know, arguably a lot of the music is probably coming from CD or these days coming from a hard drive?
Yeah.
How does it sound different? Do you have a sense for that?
Well, I mean, to me, I feel like if I'm flipping the dial, I can sometimes tell when music is being played from a computer, you know, particularly a video service, perhaps.
Oh, when it gets that shimmery,
yeah, there's like
underwatery kind of sound.
Rest, yeah. You know, you're just not hearing the full range of sounds. So, I mean, I hear that quite often when I'm flipping around on some other non-commercial stations. And so to me, when people are playing from vinyl or, you know, even high quality cassettes, it tends to sound better to me over the radio. But, you know, there's a lot of people, audiophiles have a lot of different opinions about
there's like an aesthetic still, like, you know, even if we get away from like the better or worse argument, right?
Right.
You know, I wonder, do you hear the clicks and pops?
Yeah, you might hear crackles and pops.
I'm also
depending on how clean the record is.
I'm also thinking, though, that not only does analog sound different, but that there must be there's a sorting of the selection that takes place that that physical media, and especially if you reduce it down to vinyl-only physical media, it must sort of generate just a different selection of songs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, and also, as you're saying that, it also, I think, creates a more alive sound. Because there's a human who is physically switching from record to record versus popping in a pre-programmed digital playlist.
It matters that a person is touching each track.
And you can screw it up, right? Yeah. If you don't get the cue point right, the turntable comes up to speed while the music is going.
This is fun because not only is this...
Or you hear like wrong speed radio.
That's right.
And some DJs intentionally play things at different speeds.
Right,
we have one turntable where you can play things backwards. So like that's stuff that you wouldn't hear if you were listening to an all CD or an all digital show necessarily. Although, you know, there's some artists that kind of mimic those
and there's
things.
CD players that do that too.
Yeah.
The CDJs. So
exactly.
You know. Don't get me started. You know, it's fun though, because not only is this, you know, we're talking about a vinyl day on college radio to celebrate
community radio stations,
anybody can participate actually.
And I guess there are even some commercial stations participating.
Good for them.
Yeah, there may be because it functions as sort of a fundraiser for College Radio Foundation, so there it's free to participate for non-commercial stations, but commercial stations pay, and then that goes into a fund that is utilized by the College Radio Foundation in their grant writing for college radio stations.
And I don't want to force a segue yet. I'm not sure if we're ready to change topics, but to me, this is reminiscent of, I've been thinking a lot about the days when podcasting was more of a tangible physical medium. It never was pressed to vinyl, but there was a time where you could literally hold a podcast in your hand.
Although for Record Store Day, there is a piece of WTF with Marc Maron vinyl.
There you go.
So they're pressing a record, and what it is it's performances at artists who visited the garage where he records his podcast.
Yeah.
He's recorded it. But the funny thing is that he's It's, of course, clear to rights. And on Record Store Day, you'll be able to buy it on vinyl. So it is. And I believe that Comedy Bang Bang is doing a vinyl project as well.
One of my – so I've been trolling the used CD aisles a lot. And we've talked about the use of compact discs, how it's not necessarily a useless medium, physical medium.
We've covered that.
Yeah, you can find Paul wrote about it on Radio Survivor, and you can also go listen to our episode of Radio Survivor where we sort of dug a little deeper into the idea of why CDs are worth keeping around. And ever since these days, I've been shopping for CDs, and one of my favorite to find is the rate.
All right. Well, good evening. Welcome to Foraging Ahead. I'm Kevin Factor, and with me in the studio today is Courtney Galligan. Is that correct pronunciation?
Hi, everybody.
Hi. And Courtney is the founder and
managing editor
of the New York Writers Compendium. And we're going to be talking a little bit, or I'm going to be talking a little bit with Courtney about... New York Writers Compendium, how they came about, what does it do, and a little bit about herself. So, Courtney, why don't you just explain a little bit about what the New York Writers Compendium is?
Okay. New York Writers Compendium is a website that I started to help authors advertise and promote themselves for free, because I know how difficult that can be, especially for just authors that are just starting out. And working at UAlbany and trying to get my own work published, I was like, what can I do to help this scene? So we started doing interviews with authors and going to events and doing reviews, and it has continued to grow since then.
How did this get started?
Essentially, it started almost exactly 2 years ago. My grandmother was dying, and I was taking care of her, so I did not sign up for summer classes, and I assumed that I would be taking care of her. They had given her 6 months to a year, and she died the week of finals.
Oh, boy.
So I did not have anything to do for the summer, and I contacted one of my professors at UAlbany, Jill Hanifan, and asked her if she knew of any programs in the area that I could go to or do during the summer. And she said she gave me a bunch of websites and told me about a bunch of different groups, and then said that, you know, there was not only one place to find all of these things, but if I wanted to make it, she would be willing to sponsor an internship for that the next fall.
Really? So this just got started with basically a conversation between you and the professor Jill Hanifan.
Yep.
Right. I mean, so you're a student. You're at SUNY Albany.
Yes.
Is that correct? But you're not like a 20 something.
No, I am 31, and I have a husband, and I just had a baby.
How old is the baby?
She will be 3 months old next week.
Oh wow.
Yeah, little
wow.
baby.
So how do you manage classes and writing? And
right now I'm actually doing I needed one more class to graduate in May, and I am doing an independent study from home where I'm writing an extensive piece of poetry on being pregnant. Actually,
a piece on being pregnant.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was rough. I did not have a pleasant experience with any part of it, but I wanted the baby, and she's amazing, and I regret no part of it, but I will not be doing it again.
Oh, really?
Yes, no.
This is one and done.
Yes, yeah.
Ah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. So tell me, so you're a senior English major.
Yes.
Right, at SUNY Albany, but you're in your early 30s. You have a family, you have a husband, you have a baby. So is it what happened between high school and getting into SUNY Albany?
It was about
probably 12 years. I did graduate high school. I did not graduate.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Cobleskill Richmondville High School.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It's a little bit west of Albany. I did not graduate well. My GPA was very low. I had, you know, started to skip classes and stuff. I had a rough home life, I guess. And I did move out early before I was 18. And so I was kind of on my own at that point, and I started drinking pretty heavily. I worked in sales and I drank, and that's pretty much what I did. And my writing fell off very quickly as my drinking started to increase, because it was just like I had no, it almost felt like I had no soul left, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You had no soul left.
Yeah, like I could not write. I couldn't, it wasn't writer's block. It was just there was nothing inside of me left to write. Like, I was drinking a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because sometimes, often drinking sort of facilitates the words, the flow of the words. It sort of dissolves a lot of your filters.
Yeah, which is interesting.
For better or worse, but
I've heard quotes by other authors, like, write drunk, edit sober, you know?
Right.
And at first that did work for me.
Writing drunk and editing sober worked.
Yeah, writing drunk, it definitely facilitated, like, you know, some other kind of mindset that did inspire me to write in a different way sometimes even. But I drank so much that I reached the point of just, you know, not functioning probably by the time I was like 24.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like a sustainable, like, lifestyle.
It was not, no. It got harder to work. It got harder to maintain relationships. It, you know, I was gonna burn out quick if I didn't change something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what was the catalyst for that?
Just after I turned 25, my younger brother was turning 21, and me and my sister went out for his birthday, and I got embarrassingly drunk in front of my younger siblings. So that's when I realized that, like, I am not being a good big sister. I'm not being a good role model. They'd never seen me like that before.
Oh, really?
No.
So you kind of kept it hidden, or
I lived
in
a different state at that point.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So nobody really knew what was going on. And our family isn't close anyway. So, but having them actually see me like that, it was embarrassing. I felt like I betrayed them also.
Hmm.
So I made a decision that next day to not drink again. And I have not had a drink since that day. And I will have 6 years sober on June 3rd.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
6 years. And so that was it. You decided to stop drinking. Any support or anything like that? Did you?
I did. I went to, you know, the popular group for alcoholics that has been an amazing help to me.
Mm-hmm.
I found a community there of people who knew how to live sober. I actually found in that program that there's a lot of writers and authors that find their way there, you know, and end up kind of going through that same thing. Like, very talented people just end up like drinking or doing a lot of drugs, or I'm not really sure why that is, but I've met a lot of like really amazing people that are sober.
Mm.
Yeah. Very talented people in the arts that are sober.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, why haven't thought about it? Like, why do creative people, why do they seem to be particularly susceptible or to,
I definitely
substance
have.
Abuse.
I know that.
I mean, we're both lay people. Obviously, we can't.
Yeah.
But we can certainly ruminate.
Exactly, and I have. You know, what was it? Mozart drank himself to death, but he was able to store entire symphonies in his head, never having to write them down. Like, it's amazing. It's like, you know, they say that 10% of our brain is unlocked or something like that. But it seems like people who are writers or artists have more of their brain that's unlocked, but because the world doesn't know how to deal with that, the people who don't understand think they're crazy.
Mm.
And then to feel normal, they drink or do drugs and, you know, try to stifle themselves to fit in. And that just doesn't work for very long. So that's my thought on it. Anyway.
Interesting. So, well, congratulations on 6 years of sobriety.
Thank you. And then
what made you sort of decide you needed to go back to school or start writing? Did you start writing once you quit drinking? Or
I did. Yeah. It was part of a program that I did. I did a lot of writing just about, you know, the years that I had been drinking, and that really got me started again. And it took a few years to kind of get my head on straight and, you know, get a job and get back into the world of things. But then I went back to community college at Fulton Montgomery in Johnstown, New York, because I needed to get my grades up from high school. But I did amazing there and was on the dean's list every semester and took every English class that they possibly had to offer. And that was wonderful. And then I transferred to UAlbany after my 2 years there.
And you've been there, so you've been there for just 2 years now.
Yep, I've been there for 2 years.
I was also a returning student. I went to graduate school in my 40s. And I found it extremely amusing and occasionally maddening to be in class with 20-somethings. How did that work for you?
Interestingly, it was harder at community college.
Really?
I think it was just, I don't know, maybe the requirements to get in were a little bit different, and it was a lot of kids right out of high school.
In community college?
Yeah, in community college. So, like, that I kind of had a harder time with. I definitely stuck to myself and just got my grades up to get into UAlbany because that was my goal. You know, and at UAlbany, it was interesting being with all the, you know, the young 20-somethings. But they were great. I don't know. I met a lot of really smart people, and generally they weren't a problem or disruptive in class. Or, like, that had been some of what I had seen at community college. It was, like, they still being disruptive, not really necessarily wanting to be there. And then I applied for the BAMA program as soon as I could and was accepted. So I was able to take master's classes. And at that point I was with people my own age and older and younger, but they were very, very serious about being there. So it was nice to have that dedication from other people too.
So you started this, and who else did you enlist in putting together the New York Writers Compendium?
The first semester was fall of 2018, mm-hmm. no, 17, sorry, 2017. And that semester, it was an internship for just myself. And that entire semester, I sat and I researched authors and writing organizations and publication locally, like local publications, and did as much research as I could and compiled all of this information. And then the next semester, we took that information to the New York State Writers Institute and showed them what I had done and talked to them about what I wanted to make, which was the website, to have this, like, just compendium of where to find everything literary in. It started in Albany, and then it spread to the Capital District, and then now it's pretty much all of New York. We don't really cover the city because that's a big one.
Yeah, the city, I would say that would pretty much take.
Yes.
But it's not. No, there's other places in New York besides New York City.
Well, interesting. On our Facebook page, we've had people from New York City, like, join the group and are like, wow, we didn't know there was that much going on upstate. We're gonna make an effort to get up there.
Really?
Yeah. So that's been really cool.
Yeah. And I kind of personally think we have enough people up here.
I don't think they're moving up here. They're just gonna, you know.
No,
come
they
to
start. They try. They take a look, and then they're like, "Oh, it's kind of nice, and it's decent." And then, like, all of a sudden, you know.
Yeah. Well, we just won't be too welcoming when they come to our poetry readings and stuff.
No, poetry readings are very welcoming.
They are.
They are. Yeah. That's why I don't go anymore. They have no discernment. They just let anybody come in.
Yeah.
Listen, enjoy poetry. So tell me. So you're sounds like you're more familiar with sort of the Albany scene.
Mm-hmm.
Now I left the Albany scene 30 years ago.
Okay.
But we know a lot of the same people, right?
Right.
Mary Panza, mm-hmm. who was a dynamite firecracker of a young poet.
She's a dynamite firecracker of a poet still.
She is. I would love to get her, and then Dan Wilcox.
Yep.
Who was sort of the.
The mayor of poetry.
The mayor. Well, there was another mayor before Dan. Dan is. There was a. I forget his name. Just a beautiful human being. It'll come to me as soon as the show ends.
They do a memorial for him every year, right?
Yes.
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 I can't think of his name either right now.
Right. But yeah, he was. He walked the walk, he talked the talk. And
he was one of the three guys of Albany, right? There was Dan and him and another Charlie Rossiter.
And Charlie Rossiter, yeah.
Who's
Charlie.
In Vermont now.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, I remember Charlie Rossiter and Don Levy, who was just hilarious.
He just read at Readings Against the End of the World last weekend.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And there was loads and loads and loads of other people. It was a really neat, vibrant scene, and it's amazing and wonderful that it's continued.
Yeah.
And grown, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Just huge.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what's going on? You do not just poets, right? You do
novelists
and other and essayists. And mm-hmm. So if people go on the site, which once you give the address of the site or
the address of the site is newyorkwriterscompendium.com.
Okay.
And it is not just me now.
Mm-hmm.
It is I just want to like say this before, because the interns help a lot at this point. So after that first semester, we basically pitched what I wanted to do to the New York Writers Institute.
And for those of people who don't know what the New York Writers Institute is, want to tell a little bit about them.
The New York Writers Institute is based at UAlbany, mm-hmm. and it was founded by William Kennedy, who has written many, many books himself, and is still a big part of the Writers Institute, which is amazing. And Paul Grondahl is the director there. And they work really hard to bring in authors from all over the country and different kinds of, like, I just recently saw Pamela Paul there, who is the editor of the New York Times book review section. And that was amazing, because I would like to start doing book reviews for Compendium.
Oh.
Just to offer that to authors.
Mm-hmm.
So
if somebody wanted to get involved, is there room, or are you simply using students, interns? If somebody wanted to, let's say, do a book review and submit a book review.
I actually do take book reviews from other people.
You do take book reviews from other people,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep. I have somebody who right now they write them and post them on Facebook. And I was like, is it okay if I put them on my website? And they're like, absolutely.
Oh.
So that is definitely open to people. I have passed out flyers before and advertised that anyone who wants to submit in an event review is welcome to do that. The interns pretty much help me run the website. They keep the calendar up to date.
Mm-hmm.
We have multiple events all over the state going every day. And I started out with one intern in the spring of 2018, and he helped me get the site up and running and started doing some of the event reviews and interviews. And then for the last year, I've had three interns each semester that help me keep the website up to date, do author interviews, and the event reviews.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So that way we have, you know, we have a good amount of content to keep on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we also manage our social media and have one of the interns manage one of the accounts. You mm-hmm. know, they do Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter now. So
another world.
It is.
Another world. You don't even know. I went to school with a typewriter.
Really?
Yeah. Like an electric typewriter, but it was a typewriter nonetheless.
Sometimes I feel like that would be really nice, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. It, no. No. Whiteout. You have no experience with whiteout.
True. Very true.
You know, so, yeah. The actual mechanical typing of the paper consumed a tremendous amount of time. You know, be that as it may. So what's coming up? What's coming up for the month of May or in the future? What are you excited about?
Let me take a look, because right now my focus, while I love Compendium and it is my pet project, my focus is on graduation. I am graduating next month, and I'm just finishing up the work that I need to do for that. But I know that my interns have kept up with the calendar, so let's see what we have on here.
Right. Well, while you're looking at the calendar here, I was thinking of doing a poetry show today, even though there's already an excellent poetry show on WGXC. And it's springtime, and I don't know, you just... It's National Poetry Month, and these things just keep popping up all over the place. And I had a imaginary conversation by Linda Paston came in, and I just loved this. So I'll do that while you. I'm having trouble with the music. I have an Air Supply LP backup that we may break for a few minutes and listen to some random music from the 70s or right. 80s. I don't even know when Air Supply was. But this is Imaginary Conversation by Linda Paston. You tell me to live each day as if it were my last. This is in the kitchen, where before coffee I complain of the day ahead, that obstacle race of minutes and hours, grocery stores and doctors. But why the last, I ask? Why not live each day as if it were the first? All raw astonishment. Eve rubbing her eyes awake that first morning, the sun coming up like an ingenue in the east. You grind the coffee with the small roar of a mind trying to clear itself. I set the table, glance out the window where the dew has baptized every living surface.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. I live every day like it's your last. I'm like, no, this is, yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I've never heard that one before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's good. It's just, poetry's just popping up all over the place. And that's a nice thing about National Poetry Month.
Yeah, know? Absolutely.
It keeps people's, keeps people's ears a little bit open. Mm-hmm. So what have we got?
Well, the first weekend is a busy one. Uh-huh. We have May the 4th Star Wars Storytime at the Saratoga Bookstore, Northshire.
May the 4th.
May the 4th.
Oh, right, Star right, Wars. Right.
Yeah. And
what is that?
I guess the description here says, in honor of May the 4th and Children's Book Week, join bookseller Lee for a very special Star Wars story time. Lee will share some of her favorite Star Wars picture books for the very young. And then that same day, we actually have the New York State Writers Institute. They're doing a selected shorts, readers, and writers program.
Ooh.
This event has a readers and writers theme with a suite of stories celebrating writers and their readers, and I know that we got one of our interns a spot in that event, so there will be a review of that coming up soon on our website.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. The Knott Spring Writes Literary Festival Comedy Show, which is in Ithaca, that same day. And you can find many, many events like that every single day all over the state. on the Sunday is Christine Fasora Beyond Onomatopoeia at the North Shire Bookstore in Saratoga. They host a lot of events also. As well as the Stevenson Plaza Bookstore right across from UAlbany.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they host a lot of authors and poets, and we've had quite a few reviews of them this semester too. I know Don Marar just did an event there, and she's a poet also.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anything closer to our listening audiences?
Hudson Valley Writers Guild was running a poetry contest all month.
Oh.
I guess that is actually continuing through May 25th.
Very nice.
Yeah. We have some events in Kingston. How far is Kingston?
Kingston is not far at all.
Not far at all.
Kingston is an up and coming city. Kingston is soon going to rival Hudson, I think, in creative energy.
Mm-hmm.
Very different from Hudson. It's across a river. I used to work in the high school there. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was all right. there's an
amazing bookstore there called mm-hmm. Rough Draft Bar and Books.
Mm-hmm. Have you been?
Yes, I have. And they're very welcoming. They were very happy to hear about our project and send us events to post.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. And one thing that they do, I believe this is weekly, is the Sip and Write Night with Kingston Writers Studio. So it just says join the Kingston Writers Studio for a sip and write night where you can choose from coffee, beer, wine, and a selection of non-alcoholic drinks to enjoy while you write. And just gives authors and writers a chance to sit and kind of collaborate and or just have a space to work together, which is really nice because writing can be very isolating sometimes, but it's also not.
How so?
I find that I like to write alone.
But how do you not write alone?
How do you not write alone?
I mean, unless you're writing, maybe dialogue or comedy writers.
I mean, you're always writing alone.
Yeah.
But I guess that in a environment like that, you're writing alone among a lot of other writers.
Mm-hmm.
So you're alone, but you're not alone. You're obviously always going to be writing alone. That's not really a group activity that you can do.
No, it can be, but it rarely works well. You hear of writing teams, comedy, that works for comedy. I don't know that it works for many other forms.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I do know that this is also up in Albany, but there's a retired professor who runs a workshop at one of the libraries for people to just come and workshop their writing, which is really helpful. I've heard that once you're out of college, it's a little bit harder to find people to read your work and workshop and.
Yeah. So for you college kids, network now.
Yeah.
And grab the people that you want to collaborate with through much of the rest of your life. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Nancy Klepsch and Dan Wilcox run a second Sunday poetry group in Troy, New York.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, where is that?
It's at the Arts Center,
mm-hmm.
right on River Street in Troy. And I've been to that, and that was really great. They have a good amount of people there that go, and they perform, and just kind of get together and talk about it afterwards, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
And are those things well attended? Are more and more people coming to these events?
They are. Yeah. And, part of our advertising, I know, has helped that. It's definitely, it's not on a large scale, but mm-hmm. people are seeing more events and commenting on the site and being like, thank you for posting this. And so I know that that's been helpful. And the authors in the community that I've met, which is quite a few of them at this point, have been very encouraging and are like, thank you for helping advertise, because that's part of the problem is being able to advertise those things or having a venue to advertise those things.
Right.
Or the
right.
money.
Right. So. I mean, it used to be sort of the alt weeklies
mm-hmm.
where you would find listings. And I guess I don't know why there isn't. I mean, maybe there is. I don't know. I'm old. I don't really go out much. But that there'd be sort of like a timeout for the Hudson Valley or an event. I mean, I've looked for things, and sometimes stuff will come up, but often there'd be a lot of things that just weren't there. It's hard to find a central like a central hub where you can like really figure, you know, see what's happening.
Right.
And so hopefully this is filling that niche.
Yeah, I mean, that is the goal of Compendium, and when we put in events, we don't just copy them from other calendars. We get in touch with people. We make sure they're still running. You know, we have come across some that are showing as active on another calendar, and they are not active any longer. So we remove them from our calendar. I try to keep it as active and up to date as possible, so that, you know, people don't show up and there's nobody there. So, because that's very frustrating. Sometimes I've had that happen before.
What, people show up and nobody's there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The group has stopped and just the, you know, it hasn't been updated online.
Yeah, that's
anything.
Happened.
That's, yeah.
That yeah. happens.
So I make an effort to contact the contact people.
That's good. No, it takes a lot of work. And do you get paid for this or no?
I do not. No.
No.
Nope. Right now, it's a project under the school.
Mm-hmm.
And when I graduate, the goal is for it to come with me, and I would like to turn it into a non-for-profit so that I can keep it free for authors and libraries and that kind of thing.
So is that's the goal after graduation, is to take this to the next level?
That's the goal, yeah. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what do you envision in the future? I noticed you have interviews,
mm-hmm.
right? Have any of the authors, have you interviewed any of them? Who's been your favorite?
Who's been my favorite?
Or one of your favorites? Or
well, I have had my interns do all of the interviews so far.
Oh, all right.
Because I'm in the background running the website and managing them and you know, having a baby and stuff.
Sure, yeah, so, you're busy.
But I don't know. I really enjoyed Danielle Collins' interview.
Who's Danielle Collins?
Danielle Collins is she's a poet in Troy.
Oh.
And she's very active in the poetry scene. She does a weekly open mic at Troy Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
She runs different writing workshops for kids and adults. She's very active. And I really enjoyed her interview. And there's just some authors have really great stories. Hexam Jai, I believe is how you say his name, told a story. You know, he was talking about writing and everything, but then he told a story during his interview with my intern about how he got hit by a car one day and just kind of like rolled off the car and kept walking. And it was just like, I don't know. It's just, sometimes they come up with some funny stories that get in there, which is really nice. I like to, you know, I want to hear about the writing, but I also want to hear about the author's life and what inspires them.
And I
sometimes that's getting hit by a car, I guess.
I guess. I mean, trauma is often inspiring. So what inspires you to write? I mean, what is it? You said you've been writing since you were in high school, or you said you thought maybe even junior high school, but
a long time.
Junior high school is.
I don't really remember that.
No.
I've been writing for a long time, since high school for sure. And I would have to say that I agree with the statement that you just made, that trauma is an inspiration. I know that a lot of my early writing was very sad, mostly, about my family life, and I do not have those notebooks anymore.
Oh, no, you burned them?
I didn't, actually. I lost them.
Oh.
But anytime anybody read them, they were very moved, and it was, you know, it was hard. It was in a hard way that they were moved.
You could be honest with a piece of paper in a way.
Absolutely.
That you is sometimes difficult to be with other human beings.
Yeah.
Is it interesting? Oh, so you, so because I had an experience not too long ago where I was unpacking some storage bins at and all of a sudden there was like all this old writing of mine from like when I was in high school.
Wow.
You know, and there was also I don't know if you're familiar with Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
Right. I had a feeling you would be. and I had all these like notebooks filled with these like adventures that I had, you know, written as a dungeon master.
Mm-hmm.
And my son at the time was kind of into D&D, and I had the old books, you know, the original sort of advanced D&D books, and they were, you know, the bindings were and the pages were all dog-eared, and it was like for him like a treasure chest, and he started looking through the adventures that I had written. And they were dense. I was looking at them like it was just like pages and pages and pages of description and narrative. And he read about two or three pages and he started laughing. And he's like, "This is boring, boring, boring.
This is like
reading history book, you know." And I was like, "Oh wow, all right." But it was wild hearing your 16, 17-year-old self.
Yeah.
You know, and especially sort of your early attempts at therapy, you know, and when you have to speak out and you have to get stuff down and you discover that, you know, you have something to say,
right.
You know, or you think you have something to say. And I remember coming across a few things. I'm thinking, God damn, I'm still dealing with this same stuff.
Right.
You know. Still working out some of these things, you know. You get a little better at it as
yeah.
it goes on. So, but I'm sorry, but you haven't had that opportunity because you lost.
I did. I lost a lot of it. I do have some poetry that I still either memorized or didn't lose.
Mm-hmm.
But I moved a lot, so I lost a lot of stuff during that. You know, and now writing, I definitely had a traumatic pregnancy and that has given me a lot to write about. Mm-hmm. But what's really nice about it is when I was younger and I wrote, there was no happy anywhere involved in any of the writing. It was all very depressed and melancholy. And I was told by, you know, my high school teachers that it was good writing and stuff, but there was no happy anywhere in it. And now, even though I'm writing about trauma, I am happy. You know, I'm happy with my life. I'm happy with my baby. I don't regret that decision at all. You know, so it's like, even though I'm writing about this trauma, there's like this little bit of light in each one of the pieces anyway.
Oh,
so, which I really like. It's been a neat difference in my writing.
And was there a day where you all of a sudden you realized that you were happy? Because it's a strange feeling sometimes if you're not used to it.
Like, it was.
Like, what is that? And
after I got sober, it was probably, I don't know, maybe a year in. And
do you remember the day or the time or the moment?
I don't remember. I mean, I remember. I don't remember the day, but I remember where I was. And I was like standing outside and just something simple, looking at the sky. And it wasn't even necessarily that I recognized it as happiness. I just knew that I wasn't sad. I wasn't sad. I wasn't
so
mad.
So happiness was the absence of sort of misery and agony.
Yeah,
and
there was no worry.
Yeah.
There
I'll
was
take that.
No, yeah. And I was like, oh, my God, what is this? And, you know, 5 minutes later, I started worrying again. But over the years, I've been able to hold on to that for longer and longer.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I woke up, I think about a week ago, I woke up and I was like, I got well rested and happy. And it was just bizarre. It was just a bizarre feeling. I mean, happy, I'm a pretty happy person, but
yeah.
Like well rested, not generally. So I like put it on the Facebook, you know, like that's, I haven't, I published a piece recently, but I haven't written in seriously for a while. But I put it up on Facebook and, you know, like I woke up well rested and happy. Does anybody else have this problem? And people were like, it was, most people were like, that's insane. How did that happen? You know,
right.
Like, what? No, I don't have that problem. Like, everybody's stressed out. But I'm happy that you're happy.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like you've had a rough haul. So you're finishing up your studies. Sounds like you're writing this sort of epic piece on your traumatic pregnancy.
I am. I actually.
You have anything from it you want to read a little bit? That'd be great.
Yeah, I actually have a piece that's part of it. It's called Petite Sincerity. Under a tree of pure sanctimony, I dropped a single seed. A great purple orb bubbled or fluttered above and beyond the soil's surface as rain fell in cold sheets. But the ground heaved and sighed and committed to die under the weight of terminal lies. The rush and swish and pull and push of the storm's breath seized stem after stem of leaf after leaf on this branching icon of false virtue. As the thunder raged and leaves were ripped from their home of deceit, the gentler drops of necessity were able to sneak, slink, and slide between the twisted branches and gaps where the leaves of lies once prospered. Later in the light, I went to grieve another dead seed and instead found an orb of royal purple protruding from the hole I once dug. I saw the sun's rays break through the storm-made gaps, and as it fell on the orb, I saw the sprout within. I picked up the rusty, rotting axe that had leaned on the tree of affected piety all this time and began cleaving again.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice. Where does that come from?
Where does that come from?
Mm-hmm. Other than your mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. The purple orb was my stomach, actually. Like, I happened to look down at my stomach one day when I was pregnant and I was wearing a purple shirt. Then that just
there
came
you
out.
Go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah.
Like, you just have a notion and often, yeah, people, I think, to get a notion like that or to make a little observation, to notice things.
Yeah.
And then to hold on to that noticing and then develop something out of it. And I think that's why so many people don't write poetry. It's because it requires staying in that moment and pulling apart what it is that you just discovered.
It is difficult.
Yeah.
Sometimes to sit with those feelings for that long. I've definitely been, for this particular epic poem, I've been working with prose poetry. I used to really like the
I play a little devil. There's poetry and there's prose,
right it's, and that's why this was something
you can have prose that is poetic,
right,
but that just sort of describes sort of a certain aesthetic or, you know, use of language.
Yeah.
But prosodic poetry, explain that.
I would love to. That is why I chose to write that way. I'm working with a professor who is very encouraging and gives me a lot of feedback, but there is no, that's one thing I've noticed as I'm kind of playing with this not really form of poetry, is that it's very open. It's kind of like free verse, and it does essentially come out to be poetic prose. And it's just, I don't know, it's a different kind of writing than prose or poetry, but I enjoy it.
Mm. What separates it from just regular prose?
I think it's just the fact that it doesn't really technically fall into any form of poetry. Like, what I just read, when you look at it on the page, is more in, it's the formatting. It's more in paragraphs than stanzas or any kind of, like, rhyming scheme or foot or meter or anything like that. And, like, I've definitely written in those forms before. I've written sonnets, and right. So I've played around with all of
but
it.
But as opposed to, I mean, why isn't it just free verse?
I guess because of the way that it looks on the page. Mm-hmm. So okay. Reading it out loud, you wouldn't be able to tell. Mm-hmm. But looking at it on the page, there's a couple of authors that I've been reading recently who, like, they will just have blocks of text on the page in their book. But it's considered poetry. And it's, I hate to use the word flow because professors always ask, what do you mean by flow? You know, but it, like, the way the words flow and paint the picture of that feeling or movement that they're sitting in, like how we were just talking about how mm-hmm. poets need to sit in that moment.
Well, everybody does. Is poets right. Poets just record it.
Yeah. So
or try.
Right. So it's like when they recorded it, they just wrote it in no particular style. I guess it could be considered free verse, but it's more in paragraphs. So that's where it gets its prose name up from.
Mm. All right.
But I think if you look up
I'll let you
prose
off the hook.
Poetry,
I won't press you on this.
Yeah, I think if you look up prose poetry, there's not really going to be a whole lot of information.
No. Well, you know, you're the second or third person who I've spoken to in the last week or so who said that they write prose poetry.
Right.
And I just thought it was just I don't mean to denigrate it or poo-poo it.
It's definitely more something that contemporary. It's not a classic thing, and it's something kind of just creative to play around with. Like that's why, like if you look it up, it's not going to have a list of rules like a sonnet would.
Mm.
Yeah.
How are you reading rhymed metered poetry? You all right with it?
Yeah.
You want to give some Gerard Manley Hopkins a shot?
Sure.
You familiar with Spring?
I am not.
All right. Take a quick look over that.
Okay.
And I'll talk, and when you feel like you can ready, you can deliver that. There's a wonderful line in there. So this is Foraging Ahead. Thanks for sticking with us. Our guest today has been Courtney Galligan, the founder and CEO of New York Writers Compendium. And it's a resource for all literary poetic events, readings throughout the Hudson Valley and New York, all the way from Cornell down to Westchester, I suppose. And it's rather comprehensive, and it is it's worth checking out. They have some interviews. They'll accept book reviews if you like writing book reviews for no money and you want to send them in. They'll take a look at them, and if they're any good, they might publish them, put them up there, you know. And it just seems like a lovely resource, and it's filling a need for writers and other sort of creative people in our fair state. So you ready to hit the Gerard Manley Hopkins?
I am.
You
ready?
Okay. So Courtney's going to read us out with a poem for spring by Gerard Manley Hopkins.
Nothing is so beautiful as spring. When weeds and wheels shoot long and lovely and lush, thrush's eggs look like little low heavens, and thrush through the echoing timber does so rinse and ring the ear, it strikes like lightnings to hear him sing. The glassy pear tree leaves and blooms, they brush the descending blue. The blue is all in a rush with richness. The racing lambs, too, have fair their fling. What is all this juice and all this joy? A strain of the earth's sweet being in the beginning in Eden Garden. Have, get, before it cloy, before it cloud, Christ, Lord, and sour with sinning, innocent mind and May Day in girl and boy. Most, O maid's child, thy choice and worthy the winning.
What is all this juice and joy? That's one of my favorite lines of all time.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. You familiar with him?
I am not. That's the first time I've heard that. I'm
really?
Very moved, actually.
Oh, like, you can keep that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. He's an interesting poet. Interesting dude.
Yeah.
Very religious, but a very different sort of theology that he subscribed to. And, some killer lines. So this has been Foraging Ahead on WGXC 90.7 FM, Hudson, Catskill, Acre. And thank you so much. This is listener-supported radio for open ears. And you guys have a great